Right, good evening. Okay, since we are in the 3 weeks, the discourse tonight, it was actually one which was said for this week's Sedra, which is Matas Masei. It was said in 1962 for this week's Sedra. And it focuses not on a verse in the Sedra, but a verse in Haggai, which talks about the temple. And it's verse 9 at the bottom, verse 9, where Haggai is talking about, he's actually talking about the second temple. Because Haggai is there. You see, the Jews went to Babylon in the first exile. The first temple was destroyed.
That just started.
And then...
17.
Yeah. The first temple was destroyed. And then you have Haggai, the prophet Haggai, who is there talking to the Jews, inspiring them, admonishing them, at the time of the building of the second temple. So there is a verse here which is actually on, it's really about the third temple. It's about the coming of the Messiah. So if we look at the earlier verse, verse Zion, Vehirashti es kol hagoyim, I will stir all the nations. Uvau chemdat kol hagoyim, and the precious things of all the nations will come. Umileti et habayis hazeh kavod, and I will fill this house, this temple, with glory. Omer Hashem Tzvaos, says God, the Lord of hosts. Li hakesev v'li hazav, Na'um Hashem Tzvaos, mine is the silver and the gold, says God, Lord of hosts. Godol yeh kvoid habayis hazeh acharon, greater will be the glory of this latter temple, minarishon, than the first. Omar Hashem Tzvakois, says God, the Lord of hosts, ubamokoim hazen, in this place, eten shalom, I will give peace. Nu'um Hashem Tzvakois, says the Lord of hosts. Well, that's amazing, especially peace. In terms of, never mind the nations of the world, but just among the Jewish people, the nation of peace, that would be a really wonderful.
Can't be that exciting. Can't be that exciting. Whoever's coming.
You want me to. Laddie, come. Wait. Okay. Laddie, come here. Wait.
No. Please come on. Welcome. Now, it's a nice man. So far as I know.
the cautious accountant. Your business is doing very well, yourself. I think.
Thank you. All other things being equal.
Hi, how are you? Right, how was the movie?
Didn't go in the end. Get a babysitter. Babysitter is down.
Oh no!
Yeah. See what happened?
He was going to go out when we didn't have a show.
Yeah, that's a, I'm going to see him on a show. I'm going to see a movie. No, babysitter is down. That's what happens.
Right, so we've just read a verse from Haggai, which is talking about the temple, about greater will be the glory of this latter temple than the first temple. Now, there's a sense in which Haggai is talking about the second temple, and the sages comment that the second temple lasted longer than the first temple. It's only by a very small number of years difference. The first temple lasted 410 years, and the second temple lasted 420 years. So I'm not sure if you were doing an experiment of some kind, like whether that would be considered a significant difference. 10 out of 410, I mean, that's not, you know, that might just be seen as a random difference. But still, that's how the sages put it. However, the discourse takes it, that this verse is not relying on other sources, that it's not only talking about the second temple, it's talking about the third temple. And the discourse, which starts on the back of the first page, is going to lead us into an exploration. This is what I would have written in the email if I had sent the email. So we're living here in a world of possibility. Into the nature of space and time, of the world as it is now, of the temple when it existed, and with a certain distinctiveness about the nature of space and time, or certainly space within the temple. There's a theme of the sages that the Holy of Holies was in some way above ordinary finite space. And the point being there that it gave the measurements for the size of the room, which the Holy of Holies was, and the size of the ark, the golden ark, which was in that room. And the thing is, let's say it's X is the size of the room. Then when you measure from the one wall to the ark, and from the other wall to the ark, those two figures add up to X. And that means that the ark didn't take up any space. The only thing is, if you measure the ark did have a measurement, it had a width. So it's as if the space was being not exactly warped, but there was some sort of connection of finite and infinite taking place. It was leaving its ordinary normal limitations. This is something the Talmud says.
Eino min hamida.
That's right. Ha'orein eino min hamida. The art is beyond measurement. It doesn't fit into ordinary measurements.
But don't they give us the measures?
Yeah, it gives what the measurements are. But when you, if you were there in the Holy of Holies and you were measuring from one wall to another, from one wall to the ark, and then from the other wall of the ark, from the other side of the ark to the other wall, it would add up to the width of the Holy of Holies, which in the sanctuary was 10 amos, and it was later 20 amos, I think. We'll see here. So that's another dimension of space. Then you also have the concept of time being mixed in as well. So there is the ordinary world, there's the realm of the temple, and then there's the third temple. And the difference that there is in terms of the nature of the third temple as regards space and time, and then how that affects the whole world. And all this is expressed in terms of divine names, giving existence to the world, Sugazun.
Bless you.
So the divine, this divine energy giving existence to the world in a revealed way or in a hidden way, and it's a combination of these things. There's the name Yudke Vovke, the name of Elohim, so a revelation of the divine, a concealment of the divine, the way they fit together. And, well, the question is when we'll be able to learn enough of it in order to be able to understand what it's saying. But let's hope so. And to help us along, we'll start with the Mimer melody, which is what we normally do, which we're going to be playing tomorrow in this conference. Oh, ya 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 ba ya ya yo ba bo. Ha yiram bara yo yo yom. Ha Yum bum ba ya ya yum boom. Ha yina dum ba yum ra dum bum boom ba hom. Ha yina dum ba ya ya yo ya yina dum ba yum bum boom. Ha yina dum ba ha yina dum ba yo ya ba yum ba yum bum bum. Om ba yam ba yam bam bam yum ba yum ba yum oh ya ya yam ba ya ra ram ba ha ya yam ba ya ra ram ba ya ba ram ba ram ba ra ra ram bam oh oh ya yam ba ram ba ya yam ba yam ba yam Hi yam baram ba ba bam bo Hi yam baram ba yam ba yo Hi yam ba yam bam bo Yam baram ba ha yam ba Oh yam bam 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 Yam ba yam bam 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 bo Yam bam 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 Right, so here we have this discourse of 1962 of this same Shabbat Matot Masoi. Godol yekvod abayis hazeh achron min harishon. Great will be the glory of this temple, this latter temple, than the first temple. V'yesh bezeh shnei pirushim, and there are two explanations of this. Pirush haposhet hu, the simple explanation is Shabbais hazeh achron, is that when it's talking about this latter temple, koi al bayis sheni, it's talking about the second temple. Shehayo gadol mibayis harishon bebinyan habashanim, it was greater than the first temple, both in its size and in the number of years it existed. So that's the straightforward interpretation of the verse in Haggai that we just read. Ubazoya issa, but in the Zohar it explains Sha'abayis hazeh achron, that this...
I can't sit on that. It's cleaning my back.
Oh, okay. Dear.
It's got a regular chair.
This is fine.
What did you say to me?
Sorry.
Sorry. And in the Zohar it explains that when it says... Habayis hazeh achron, this latter temple, koyal beis hamikdash hashlishi, it's speaking of the third temple, shiyabonu b'mehedu b'yameinu, which should be built quickly in our days. Shiyegodl mibayis harishon u'mibayis sheni, and that will be bigger, greater, than both the first and the second temple. Dishneim nichlonim b'min harishon, they're both included in Arishon, the earlier temple. So when it says this latter temple will be bigger than the earlier one, it means both number one, the first temple, and the second. Kishneim loy hoya lehem kiyam, because both the first and the second temples didn't last. Ubayis shlishi, in the third temple, yir kaim bekiyam nitzchi, will last forever. That's the traditional concept about the third temple, that the third temple will be eternal. But Zesh Omra Zal, and that's what the sages said, Loish Kavrom Shekosu Boy Ha. Not like Avraham, about which when he met with God in the most intimate way, which was at the mountain. Veloika Yitzchok Shekosu Boy Sode. And not like Yitzchok, who went out into the field, Losuach Basode, to meditate in the field. And so there it's called field. Eileke Yaakov Shekoro Bais. Jacob, when he had the dream of the ladder, he said, Ein Zeki and Beis Elikim, this is the house of God and the gate of heaven. So that's what the sages are saying, is that each of these three patriarchs, the concept of the temple is becoming more tangible. So Abraham went to the mountain where God is, which was at the Akedah, and it says there, that will be the place where they'll say that's where God is to be seen, so to speak. And Isaac called it a field, which is already more within one's reach than a mountain. A mountain is distant, the field is here, and you can be in the field. But Jacob called it a house. Yaakov called it a house. So that it's like bringing the temple more within the here and now. The whole idea that this very sacred spot in the world to become more and more within one's own ken. It's part of one's own life.
I was saying they're all talking about the same place.
Well, it's an interesting point, because the place where Abraham offered Isaac, that was the site of the temple. The place where Jacob slept was not exactly the site of the temple, but somehow there's a Kvitsa Sadera, like the site of it's an interesting juggling act that the sages carry out in order to establish that the place where Jacob slept was at the same time the place where the temple would be in Jerusalem. So, and you're quite right to raise the question about Isaac going into the field, that field should be a the side of the temple. I don't remember actually seeing that.
No, I don't remember either.
That's an interesting point. And it might be that was his meeting point with God. That's really the way I've thought of this previously. It's his meeting point with God. Do you remember the instant when Rebecca was coming back? It says Isaac went into the field to meditate. Lasuach basodeh. To speak, to meditate, to think, to pray. That's when he instituted the afternoon prayer. Mm-hmm. And then Rebecca was coming and she said to Eliezer, "Who's that man in the field?" And Eliezer said, "That's my master." And so she put a veil on her face. So that's the...
So it just means generally. We might not be talking about the same place.
Yeah, although I imagine we might be able, if we looked hard enough, we will find a midrash which will say that. Okay, so that's possible. Look in Yalkut Ruveni. You know, there's Yalkut Shimoni, which is a collection, was printed in Frankfurt actually in the 14th century, I think. Yalkut Shimoni is a collection of all previous midrashim. Yalkut Ruveni is a sort of a later midrashic collection of a more spiritual, mystical kind of midrash. So you always get an extra dimension when you look in the Yalkut Ruveni. So there's Reuven and Shimon. Alright, so that's... But the point is that it's becoming more and more a tangible meeting point, this point of connection with God. The Bayis Rishon, because the first temple, who connected Avraham, corresponds to Abraham. Or Bayis Sheni connected Yitzhak. The second temple corresponds to Isaac. Or Bayis Shlishi connected Yaakov, and the third temple corresponds to Jacob. Or Mavur Belukotet Torah, and explains in Lukotet Torah, that's by Rabbi Shneur Zalman, Shahashaychus to Bayis Shlishi Yaakov, that the connection of the third temple to Yaakov, who ki midosu shul Yaakov hi emes, is because the attribute of Yaakov is truth. The emes hu she'ein shaych bo hefsek b'shinu, and truth is something which doesn't get interrupted, which is forever. The lip of truth stands forever. Svas emes tikoin la'ad. The lip of truth is established forever. Whereas other things are less true and less real. Now, this way of looking at Yaakov as being the midr of emes, there are verses like Titan emes li Yaakov, give truth to Yaakov, and also you've got Abraham. You've got Abraham on the right representing Chesed, and Yitzchok on the left representing Gevura, severity. So that's kindness, and that's severity, and then you have Yaakov in the middle, Jacob in the middle, and so that is the point where it's as if the kindness and severity are both off the center, but Yaakov represents truth, which is in the center, also called mercy, incidentally. So that quality of truth, so that is Yaakov, and that's represents the third temple. So we have the first temple, the second, and then the third. Vehine, now behold, Perek Beis. Avshe b'maimer Razal Hanal, even in that passage we quoted from the sages, like Abram, not like Abraham or like Isaac, but like Jacob, Meduba Babesa Migdash, even though it's talking there about the temple. Haloshim Belukutei Torah Shom, the way that Lukutei Torah, now, you see, Lukutei Torah is written by Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Ladi. It's one of the books up on that shelf, a kind of maroon pair of volumes. And it was written by Rabbi Shneur Zalman. The first one was published in 1837, and the other one in 1848. These two volumes. Now, when the Rebbe taught a discourse, on the one hand, he's commenting on the Torah scroll, on the verse in the Torah, or a verse in Tanakh, as we're looking at here, a verse from Haggai. Then there is what the Talmud says about it, what the Mishnah says about it, what the Midrash says, and also what Hasidic teachings say. So it's all providing the prism, like the turning this crystal in order to see a new gleam of radiance. So the fact that Rabbi Shneur Zalman calls it something in his book, written 150 years ago, that's also saying something. That's also something to be explored. It's taking every single word of, not only of the text of the Torah, but of the sages in between, right up to present times, virtually, as being sacred and having a meaning. So it's not that only the Torah is sacred, and then you have people commenting on the Torah. All the comments are also sacred, and also have n dimensions of meaning. So there's always another dimension which can be explored and discovered. So that's the way it... very, very interesting extension of what's called the Midrash method. I read your fascinating essay. It was really lovely. I'm sorry, I meant to email you about it. Thank you very much for sending it. But that idea that Midrash is not only a Midrash on the text, but the words of the sages itself becomes the text, which then can be expounded. And so at this point, he's taking the words of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, the founder of Chabad, in 1850, lived before 1850, but the book was published then. He's taking that as a text which can then be expounded further. So it says there in Likutei Torah, Hu Loshon Geulos. It doesn't say temples, it says redemptions. Geula Rishonu B'Schus Avram, the first redemption with the merit of Abraham. Geula Shnia B'Schus Yitzhak, the second redemption with the merit of Isaac. And Geula Shlishis B'Schus Yaakov, and the third redemption with the merit of Jacob. Umavua Sham de Geula Shlishis. And it explains there the basic concept, which is very much part of Jewish thinking, that the third redemption is an eternal redemption. Va'abiyu b'zeva pashtus hu, and the simple meaning of this is ki me'ikre ha'ge'ula hu binyan beis hamikdash, connecting redemption and temple, that an essential aspect of the redemption is building the temple, va'al yedei shemitosef ilu b'beis hamikdash, through the fact that there's something special about the temple, the third temple, ha'ge'ula hinayis yosa, there will be something extra about that redemption. So you see, there's exile and redemption is one kind of cycle of history. And another kind of cycle of history, which fits it almost exactly perhaps, is the cycle of temple or not temple. Is the temple there or is the temple destroyed? And what this discourse is doing is it's going to focus on the temple itself as a place, and as a place, what does it mean that this temple is a place, and what do we mean by place? What do we mean by space? What do we mean by a region of the world? What do we mean by world in relation to the infinite? So that's the kind of movement that it's going. So, v'lechein makasha v'lekutei Torah hamayla de geula shlishis, that's why in Lekutei Torah it connects the significance of the third redemption with the significance of the third temple. In other words, if I understand it correctly, it's not just the third temple as a building, it's taking the third temple as an epoch and as a stage of history, a stage of being, which is going to help us explore the whole idea of the nature of the temple. Okay, I think we can move on to Se'if Gimel. That's on the next page. And we can understand this by first quoting a phrase from the sages. Olo Arya, the lion came, Bemazel Arya, in the constellation of Leo, Vehecheriv es Ariel, and destroyed the Ariel. Now the Ariel is a term meaning the temple. It's the it's a term meaning this very beautiful, special point, Ariel, and it is the temple. So the lion is Nebuchadnezzar, who came in the constellation Arya, the lion, Leo, which is the month of Av, and destroyed the Ariel. Okay, so it's a pun, if you like. Three words all with the word Ariel. But it goes on. Almanos, in order, Sheyovoi Arya, that the lion, this time meaning God, should come. Bemazel Arya, in the same month, the same constellation of Leo. Vayivna Ariel, and will rebuild the temple. So it's all put in terms of the word lion, and it's saying that the lion Nebuchadnezzar came and destroyed the temple in the month of the constellation of Leo, in order that the lion, meaning God, should come in the same month and rebuild the temple. From this movement, from this we understand, the march cost of God that what it's saying, that the glory of the third temple will be even more than the first. Here we're entering a interesting virtual possibility. That's even if the first temple hadn't been destroyed. Somehow you can imagine history with the first temple not being destroyed. And it would have continued forever. Even then it would not have had the same force as the third temple. It's a very interesting way of thinking. V'lechein ola Arya, and therefore the lion had to come, v'hichrib es Ariel, had to destroy the temple, b'chdei sheyova Arya v'yivna Ariel, in order the second kind of lion would come and rebuild the temple. Sheyeh godol yosem in Arishon, which would be greater than the first, gam be'im hayo loikim nitzchi, even if it had been eternal, even if by itself it would have been eternal. So there's, see, for example, if Moses would have entered. Now this is what it says in footnote 18. Footnote 18 says, quoting from... That's right. Can you translate?
Yes, but he's saying that even if that would have happened...
Well, first translate. Say what is happening in...
Oh, you mean you want me to translate this?
Well, yeah, I'll just give over the idea. If Moshe...
If Moses would have brought in the children of Israel into Israel and built the Beis HaMikdash, then it wouldn't have been destroyed.
It wouldn't have been destroyed. That's a fascinating thing. So there's a possibility that the first temple would have a permanent quality... And nonetheless, even though it has a permanent quality, the first temple itself is not enough.
Yeah.
There's some extra dimension that is needed. The issue about the temple is not just whether or not it gets destroyed. There's another factor which we need to consider about the nature of the temple, which makes us understand that there's the first temple and the second and the third. And the third is in some way higher than the first, even if the first, for whatever reason, would not have been destroyed, such as if Moses himself would have come into the land of Israel.
So you're saying that destruction is necessary?
It's a sense in which kind of step.
It's not a strange. You find the concept straight away in two places. You find it on Shabbos. You're not allowed to build, but you're included in building is you're not allowed to knock down a building in order to rebuild.
In order to rebuild. So in other words,
so salmonos lidnos, that's included in building. And the second place where obviously you find it, or where which occurred to me, is the Ten Commandments.
Right.
The Ten Commandments were broken, and the next one came. And the Gemara is full of different qualities that the first one would have had, and that the second one had.
So another one, and then in fact, the second one is higher than the third, than the first.
No, it works the other way.
Well,
sure
it works
that.
Both
works
ways.
It works the other way. It says if the first one, if it wouldn't have been broken, then nobody would ever have forgotten anything which they learned.
Yeah, but also the Torah would have been very minimal. Because with the second tablets of the Ten Commandments comes Midrash, Mishnah, Braisa, Tosefta, you know, like all the multiplicity. And the dual and paradoxical dimension of Torah comes with the second tablets. If you only have the first tablets and we haven't served the golden calf, then the Torah would have been much more linear.
Yeah.
No one would have forgotten, and it would have been very straightforward.
Yeah.
But like this, you have different views and paradoxes, you know.
Yeah, it must be different anyway, because the Gemara says, Asher Shibalto, that God said to Moses, Yasher Kocha Shishibalto, you did the right thing to break it. So that must mean that there's quality in the second that wasn't.
Which
in.
Is better. Right, okay. You're quite right. I think these are very good two examples of where the destruction of something leads to something higher. And here there's a third parallel. Va'alderech hamayla debalei tshuva al tzadikim. Like what the Talmud says, that the repentant person is higher than the person who never sins.
Yeah.
The avoidus of tzaddikim, because the service of the tzaddikim, gam tzaddikim she'en lehem yetzahara, even a tzaddik, not just a person who doesn't do bad, but he doesn't have an evil desire, he's transformed it. She'lechein ein shayach she'yeh etzlam chet, he's gone beyond to a point where he couldn't sin. Va'avoidus on he be'oifen dekiyum nitzchi, and his service is in a way, or her service is in a way of a kind of an eternal establishing of Torah. Nonetheless, this righteous person who never sins and can't sin, that only magas b'shtalshlus, that service only reaches the downchaining of the world. Va'avodas ha'balei tshuva, but the service of the repentant person b'lemaila mehishtalshlus reaches beyond the downchaining of the world. Now, taking this as a little picture of the spheres, you have the Ein Sof above. And what happens is that the tzaddik, the service of the tzaddik doesn't reach any higher than this realm of the downchaining of the worlds. If we take it at the highest level of, there's keser, which is really beyond, and then we have chokhmah, wisdom, chokhmah and bina. So the tzaddik level only reaches to Chochmah, to wisdom, which is the beginning of the downchaining of the world, whereas the Baal Tshuva, who is in a sense lower, but actually reaches higher, because in order to repent, he or she has to reach the level of Keter, which is a level beyond the distinctions. In the downchaining of the worlds, there are distinctions between good and bad. And the person who's repenting has to reach beyond those distinctions to a level which goes beyond, and that is what enables the tshuva to take place. So therefore, the service of the Baal Tshuva goes higher. So the third temple is being compared to the Baal Tshuva. V'zeh ola ariyah v'hichri v'sa ariyel amanosh yova ariyah v'yivna ariyel. So we have this Talmudic saying of the lion coming and destroying the temple in order that the lion should come and rebuild it. And it's known that this Arya, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of whom it says, Arya Shag Milo Yira, there's a verse which says, the lion roars, who will not be afraid? So that is referring, so that verse in Amos, that is referring to God, who is Galus HaKeser, is a revelation of Keter, Shalamayla Mishtalshlus, which is above the downchaining of the worlds, right? So we have Keter, which is above, and Wisdom, which is below, and this line, so Keter is above the downchaining of the worlds, and so reaching that level is something crucial. V'yesh lehoisef, and one can add, shigam lefi maimer azal, also according to the saying of the sages somewhere else, in footnote 24, which Rashi brings on Yecheskel, and is cited elsewhere as well, Shekosha olu mibovel hayoroi liyois binyan zeh beis hamiglash hashlishi. When they returned from Babylon to build the second temple, it should have been the third temple. There's actually a long, there's a comment by Abarbanel on Chagai. We began off reading a bit of Chagai, so Abarbanel comments on Chagai, he brings this idea that the coming back to build the second temple, that should really have been the final temple. And the fact that that wasn't achieved can be seen as a kind of a failure. Mikol Mokem, nonetheless, by Shishi Shiyir Osid Lovoi, the third temple that will be in the future, Achrei Ba'asheni, after the second, Yir Godel Yosef will be greater. So in other words, the idea that it's the whole idea of error. There was the first temple and the errors which led to its destruction. There was the second temple and the errors which led not only to its destruction, but even at an earlier point that it wasn't as great as the first temple in certain ways. All of this, and then its destruction, all of this is part of a cycle which then leads to the third temple, which is really the goal. And that is the nature of tshuva. The hagam shagam kasha'ala mibavel, because even though when they returned from Babylon in order to build the second temple, hayu bedugan spalei tshuva, you can call them baal tshuva. So what's the difference in the third temple and the second? So the Rebbe answers, because there are different levels of tshuva. There are different levels of repentance. It's not as if it's one concept. The very nature of tshuva is that there are different dimensions of it. And so there's the second temple is one level and the third temple is even higher. So all this, through all this, they come, yagir l'shlemes ha-tshuva, they come to the most exalted level of tshuva, v'al yedei ze'yir godol kvod habayis ha-zeh achrim b'tachlis ha-shlemes, through that the third temple will be greater in a total way. All right, now so far, this has just sort of made the point that the third temple will be greater than the first and the second, and it's explored different possibilities, as it were. You know, what happens if the first temple hadn't been destroyed? It's brought the comparison of tshuva, of repentance, in relation to righteousness, giving us a kind of a model, because it's a fascinating statement in the Talmud, that the place where the repentant person stands, the completely righteous, cannot reach, that sets up a model for a whole way of thinking about existence. And that's leading into, you know, or flowing into this concept here. But I think now if we can go on to the next page. Okay. And now we come to section Dalet. Ubi o Maila Spais Hashlishi Albaisa Rishnusheni, explaining the significance of the third temple over the first two. Miss out the brackets. Yuvan Bahakti Mamaila de Baisa Migdish Bukhlal will be understood by considering the significance of the temple in general. Koilal Gama Maila de Mokum Migdish, considering also the place of the temple. The Mekoyim HaMikdash, because the place of the temple, Gam Lifnei Binyan Beis HaMikdash, even before the temple was built, Hu Lemaile Yosem HaMokom D'chol HaOlam, is higher than the place of the whole world. Now the Rambam gives a kind of a historical view of this place of the temple. It starts off that Adam and Eve were created from the place, given that Adam and Eve are described as being made from Ofer min Adama, earth from the ground, dust from the ground. Where did that earth come from? Came from the site of the temple, from the site of the altar. Then we have Adam offering an offering to God, the sages tell us, when he was created. That was at the site of the temple. Then we have later on Noah, we have Cain and Abel offering to God, that was also at the same place. Then we have Noah, despite the fact that Noah's Ark rested in Ararat, that we generally understand to be somewhere in Turkey, but nonetheless, somehow or other, that's also that same site. And so we've got the significance of this site, this spot, even before the temple's built. And this place is high, is more exalted than the rest of the world. K'moshe Kosov, as it says, Man Noira HaMokom Azeh, when Jacob came to this place and he had the dream of the ladder, he said, how fearful is this place? Ein Zekim Beisalekim, this is nothing but the house of God. V'tigam Unkelus, and Unkelus translated this, Leis Dein Asahedya, this is not an ordinary place. Shahamokum de Chola Onamu Asahedya, because the rest of the world is an ordinary place. The place, so to speak, of the world is ordinary. And what makes it ordinary? Because it was created, the rest of the world was created with the 10 statements of God. Bereshis, that there should be a world, Yehi Or, Yehi Rakia, all these different statements. Shenikre milin dehedyoita, and they're called ordinary words. But the place of the temple is not an ordinary place, as the Targum puts it. Even though Shagam Makoyma Migdash Nivra Ba Asara Mamoros, the place of the temple itself was created with the 10 statements. So there's a kind of enfolding taking place here, that the world is created with the 10 statements, and within the world is the place of the temple. And in fact, Vadarabha, in fact, Hascholos V'Ika Briya Masara Mamoros, the beginning of the creation through the 10 statements, Hoysabriya 7 Seal, was the creation of the stone of the foundation stone, Shubha Mikdash, which was in the temple, Umimenu Hushsos Kola Olam, from which the whole world came into being, as it says in Yuma, gives footnote 33 at the bottom in the Talmud. So there you have the idea that the temple is the essence of the creation of the world, of the universe. But nonetheless, there's a difference between the temple and the rest of the world. Kiba Asora Mamoris Nema, because in the 10 statements with which God created the world, it says, Vayoyim Elokim. Elokim said, Oba Makoyim Amigdosh, and in the place of the temple, Hoyogili Shem Avaya, it was a revelation of the name Yudke Vovke, as Jacob said, Ochein Yesh Avaya B'mokum Azeh. So there is Yudke Vovke in this place. So we've got the name Elokim, and we've got the name Yudke Vovke. And so those are two dimensions of existence. So I'm not quite sure how to do this graphically, but if we imagine that this is somehow the world with the name Elokim, and then we have the patch in the middle, which is the temple, and that is the name Havaya, writing Hevov Yud like that with a dash, representing Yud Kevovke. Right? So there is the name Elokim giving existence to the world as a whole, and the name Havaya giving existence to the place of the temple. And so how do we have, why can we say this? Because the world is created from Vayoyma Elokim, God said, that's in the 10th statement, the Asora Mamores, Yud Mamores, creating the world, the 10 statements creating the world, so it's the name Elokim. And this is Ein Zekiem Beis Hashem, Yudke Vovke, is said by Jacob when he has the dream of the ladder at that spot. And we've already mentioned the idea that the place where he had that dream was the spot which is the place of the temple, even though when you follow the geography of where he actually was, it sounds a bit strange, but nonetheless, Rashi puts it all into perspective. Now, next paragraph. V'tzorach bia. Now this needs explanation. So we've got a difference between the place of the temple and the rest of the world. Now this needs explanation. V'lecha'ora, because at first sight, Milas Makoima Mikdush and Amokim Dechola Olam, the difference between the place of the temple compared with the place of the rest of the world, Hubahagilui, it was in the revelation, Shahaya Babesa Mikdush. It was the revelation in the temple, the revelation of the divine presence. That's what made the temple special. Why do you say it was the place? That's the question. V'loi Ba'amokim Atzmai, not just in the place. As we mentioned, that place of the temple was created with the 10 statements which made the rest of the world. Milin dedyoita, ordinary statements. Upirish leistein asahedyon, and to say, as the Targum says, this isn't an ordinary place. Husha hamokom atzmoi, eino asahedyon, is actually implying that the place itself is something special. So, we would have thought the temple special because of the revelation of God which is there. But there's some kind of implication, looking at this Targum again as a sacred text, that there, when it says this is no ordinary place, there's something special about the place. And Akudas Habiyah Bezer, and the basic explanation of this, Alpi Mashkosa B'Tanya, according to what it says in Tanya, Shesavas Ha'olam, Himashem Avayah. In fact, the existence of the world is from the name Yudke Vovke. We said it was from the name of the Kim. Well, there's a deeper level. The existence of the world is from the name Yudke Vovke, and the name Yudke Vovke has a meaning. Havaya Loshoin Mahave. That's a very interesting aspect of the name Yudke Vovke. We are not allowed to pronounce it, but Mahave is the word which means he causes to exist. Now, if you put that instead of a participle like mahave, but with a yud at the beginning, as if it was in the third person imperfect continuous tense, that would be the yud, and that is one way of understanding what the pronunciation of the divine name is, but also what it means. It means God causes the world to exist. God is the one who is continuously causing the world to exist. But if the existence of the world would have been pure, straight from the name Yud Kevavke, then the world would be abnegated in its existence. And that means it wouldn't be a finite world in the way that we understand the world. So therefore the existence in practicality came from the name Elohim. So really the essence of existence of the world is from the name Yudke Vovke. But that has to be cloaked in the name Elohim. Because otherwise, if it was just Yudke Vovke, it wouldn't be a world in our ordinary understanding of a finite world. There's a beautiful passage in the Gemara, which is explaining the name of God, Shaddai, Shin Dalad Yud. And it says, he is the one who said to his world, die, enough. Shaddai, Sha'omar lo oinamoy die. Because if he hadn't said enough, the world would have been like a loom that you have the wool is wrapped around a thing. Is it called a spindle? Yeah. And you throw it. You throw it in like this, the warp and the weft. And you throw this thing, and it unrolls.
Yeah.
And the world would have been like that, unrolling. Like you throw it from one side of the loom to the other. You have two people on each side. They're like, and you throw it and then you change the way the warp and the weft go and they throw it back. And so it goes on and gradually you make a piece of woolen cloth. So it would have been like this thing, this spindle or whatever it's called. It would have been like that unrolling all the time. The world would have been unrolling all the time. So God said, die, enough. So it's like that. If the name would Yudke Vovke would have created the world neat, without any concealment, the world would not have a finite quality, would be completely abnegated to the divine. Wouldn't exactly be like that unrolling spindle, but it would be abnegated to the divine. It wouldn't have the nature of existence which is needed for us to have choice and other issues within the world. So there had to be the name of the kid. This harbors the Mokom HaMikdash, but the place, the coming into being of the place of the temple, Hoiseh Be'ofen, was in such a way, Sheshem Elokim Eino Masti Al Shem Havayah, that the name Elokim doesn't conceal the name Yudke Vovke. So there's the name Yudke Vovke everywhere. So we could somehow extend the blue lines, as it were, right round the world. There are these blue lines of the name Yudke Vovke. But most of the world, the name of the Kim hides it, whereas at the place at the temple, it doesn't hide it. V'zeo leisteinas ahedyo, that's why it says about that place that it's not an ordinary place. Kiva makoim amigdush ha'inigash v'gilu ishabos, because at the place of the temple, it was felt the existence of the world from God. K'moshihi m'shem havaya, as it is from the name Yudke Vovke. So that means that that place always had, it was like the the point of connection with the divine, and it always had that connection, that connecting point right from the very beginning of existence. Now comes the beginning of a long explanation, most of which we're going to miss out, of the way in which the difference between the name Elokim and the name Yudke Vovke. So let's just take the beginning of that, which is Va'inyan Hu at the bottom of this page, Zion. Va'inyan Hu, and the subject is as follows, De Sabus Mishem Elokim, existence coming from the name Elokim, who he bederech his slabshus, is in a way of enclosing. Bereshis bara Elokim. At the beginning, Elokim created. It's as if Elokim is enclosed within existence in order to make it be there. Vehisavas m'shem avaya. But existence coming into being from the name Yudke Vovke is in a different way. He ba'oifen de bederech mimela. It's in a way, an automatic way. Yahalelu Hashem Hashem, it says in Tehillim, praise the name of God, ki hu tzivo, because he commanded, the name Yudke Vovke commanded, v'nivro, and they were created by themselves, that passive form, nifa. They happened. Not that Bereshis bar Elokim, Elokim is active, is doing something and making the world. So Elokim is involved. Hislabshus, enclosed in the issue of creation. Whereas when it speaks about Yudke Vovke, Hu Tziva, he commanded, V'nivro, and the world came into being. Everything in the world came into being in the passive, because it just happened. V'hachiluk Shaboifen Nisavos, and the difference between these two types of coming into existence, miss the brackets, Moira la Yachas Shaladova Mishavela Amoka Shemahave Oisei, relates to the relationship of the thing which has come into existence to its source. B'kasher ha-mishave hu b'kiruv le-mahave, when the thing that comes into being is close to that which makes it, hishavusoi hi b'derech mimela, then its coming into being is automatic. U'kumay ilav v'olol, like cause and effect. The kivan sha'olol hu be'erech ha'ilo, since the effect relates to the cause, l'chein nisavus ha'olol ma'ilo be'derech memela, therefore the cause automatically, as it were, makes the effect. Miss the brackets. O k'moichein hu ba'orim ma'or, similarly with radiance and luminary. When the light is shining from the luminary, therefore, it's like automatic. You have the light bulb and the light is shining from the light bulb. But Kasher ha-misaveh u-berichuk me-mahaveh. When the thing being created is distant from that which is creating it, hisavusu hu-bederech hislapshus, then its coming into being is in a way of enclosing. Sha-mahaveh misasek u-mishtadel la-havus ha-sadova ha-misaveh. That which is creating has to get involved in order to make the thing which is being created. So we have here, if we made a kind of a chart. So we have the name Elohim, and we have the name Havaya. And the difference between them is active, enclosed. That the name Elohim is enclosed, and enclosed also suggests concealed. Whereas, and it's also more remote. It's operating in a more remote way. Whereas Havaya is in a more immediate way, not remote. And existence is of itself. It's not that it's actively making it. It's that the existence comes about by itself. And so it's not enclosed, and so it's actually revealed. So the very fact that something is made from the name Yudke Bovke is a different nature of being to that which is made from the name Elohim. Now Sartre was reading this when he wrote Etch and Neyor, you know, being and nothingness. So that's... Now there's a long exploration further to this, which goes all the way to page Yud. So if we miss out, you've got here a kind of angle that I've drawn there, and if you can go all the way to the end of the angle, because here it takes it all, this concept, it explores this concept in a very subtle way. Which time just doesn't permit us, but it takes this whole idea further, which is a whole aspect of Chabad Hasidic teaching, is this, so to speak, philosophic dimension about the nature of koyach and poyel and force and effect, and whether the force is evident in the effect. It's a very interesting thing, but we have to move on in order to get at least just the outline of this maima, of this discourse. Okay, so we're now looking at chapter 6, Vav. The hine yadua, now it's known, the idea that the world is defined in terms of place and time, is because its existence is because of the name Elohim. So with the name Elohim, you get space and time. Whereas if it would have been straight from the name Yudke Vovke, and the Shem Havaya, now one meaning of the word Havaya that was mentioned before is Mahave, that it causes to exist. There's another meaning of it, Hoyo Hoyve V'yiye Ke'echod. It was, it is, and it will be all at once. It's as if the name Yudke Vovke is the three states of being of the name of the verb to be, past, present, and future, combined together. As it says in various, it's basically from Kabbalistic books, and it's in Tanya, the second section of Tanya. So if that would have happened, if the world would have come into exist from the name Havaya straight, without any intermediary, as it were, without any veiling of the name Elohim, lo yoyu mugdu bahageda demokam uzman, then the world would not be defined or limited in terms of space and time. So our coarse image of space and time, brute space-time continuum, is a product of the name Elohim. V V'zeh shebebeis hamikdash k'siv, and that's why about the temple it says, Olchein yesh havaya b'mokom hazeh, this is where God is, says Jacob. Ki bebeis hamikdash hamokom hoyu lemayla megedem mokom, because in the temple the place was above the definition of place. The place was above place. Mokom ha'orin einu min ha'mida. And that famous concept from the Talmud that the place of the ark was not, it was beyond measure. Eila ba, shahagilui shehei bebeis hamikdash, the revelation that shone in the temple, hoyo hagilu d'shem havaya, was the shining of the name Yudke Vavke, the way that it shines into the name Elohim. So, the Shem Avaya, because the name Yudke Bavke Kemoishu Hu Mitzav Atzmoy, as it is in itself, Ulumayna Megedemokim, is completely beyond place. And you wouldn't have any place at all. Vezesha Kodesh HaKodoshim Hoyamokim Modiru Mugbal, the fact that the Holy of Holies was actually a place you could measure. Eshrimamo in the temple was 20 amas square. So you can measure it. So therefore it is actually a place. There's a wonderful proof that the Tzemach Tzedek brings to prove that the universe is finite. Modern physics suggests that in terms of, you know, particles, atoms and so on, the universe is finite. I'm not quite sure how they demonstrate that. But the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, he has a way of demonstrating that. He says you take any one bit of the universe, right? So this pencil is a bit of the universe. So if the universe were infinite, every little bit of the universe would be infinite as well. But since you can measure this pencil and you can work out that it's 12 centimeters long, that means that the pencil is finite and therefore the whole universe is finite, because this is a bit of the universe and therefore it is finite, and so therefore the whole of existence is finite as well. Rather neat proof. So what we're saying here, if you had a pure creation just from the name Yudke Vavke, you would not have been able to measure the pencil in the world as a whole, and even in the temple. If the temple had been coming into existence straight from the name Havaya, it would be beyond measurement. It would be completely infinite. You wouldn't be able to address a measurement to it. The fact that the Holy of Holies has got a measurement, that it's 20 amas square, 20 cubits square in the temple, with 10 cubits square in the Mishkan, in the sanctuary they made in the desert. That means that it's the name Yudke Vavke, Melubash, enclosed in the name Elohim. Right? So we have two states, as it were. Three states. We've got existence coming from Elohim, existence possibly coming from Havaya, and then you have a kind of a middle ground where there is a veil of Elohim into which Havaya is giving an input, and it's through that combined that you get the existence of the temple in such a way that at the same time it is beyond space and time, and it's also within space and time, because you have these two concepts enclosed together. So therefore,
that's like Yaakov in the middle of the Buran and Chesed.
Okay. That's an interesting way of putting it.
He blends the two together, doesn't he? He fuses the two and incorporates elements from both.
Okay. I mean, reading it back, whether... see, there's a sense in which the fact that there are different spheres itself is a product of Elohim rather than Havaya. Havaya is like the radiance within the spheres. So it's not as if Havaya is Chesed and Elohim is Gvura. It's maybe the fact of there being spheres is Elohim, and Havaya is that dimension which comes from beyond, which is a unifying factor through all the spheres. But certainly the fact that Yaakov is on the middle line which relates back to Kesser. I think that you see, Yaakov relates back to Kesser, and it's that line joining Kesser, because Kesser is the realm which is beyond, which comes into the actual reality of the world. Okay. Now, I think let's go on to section Zion, please, on page Yud Aleph. Now we have to understand the Zesh Mitzad Shem Elokim, the idea that from the name Elokim, who is Chalkus de Mokum Uzman, there is a distinction in place and time. See, the idea is that from Avaya, it's just a kind of a continuum. Whereas the name Elokim breaks it up, that this cubit is different to that cubit. Here is not there. They're like different. Hulafi, and the same in time as well. Hulafi shazman v'amokom is because time and place, k'moshim yisavim yishem elakim, as they come into existence from the name of the kim, and even this level, humetzius, they exist. The kasher nirgush v'ashishuk tzovos, the mokom. That when it's felt in the six extremities of place, north, south, east, west, up, down, uba ha'ova hoiva osid, and past, present, future, this man of time, shinyonam hu shelukusma have oisom, that really they are all being brought into being by God, hem kulum ke'echon, then they are one. So if you really felt, even with this situation of everything coming into existence from Elokim, which means distinctions in terms of place, in terms of north, south, east, west, up, down, past, present, future. But if you can feel, if you're aware, if you can see the Elokus, the godliness which is giving life to all of that, in fact, it all slides into one, and the past, present, and future become one, and place becomes one. Ve'eich shayach, how is it possible, sheba makoyma oran, that the place of the ark, which means it's a place, it exists, yegilu shem avaya, that there could be an expression of the name yudke vovke, which means a total unity, that everything is one. In a sense, how can you have these two opposites? We're presenting it as two opposites joining together. How can they be two opposites? Either you can see existence as distinct existence, that there's here and there's there, there's north and there's south, or it's all one. It's all one radiant entity. Unukudus habiyabazer, and the basic explanation of this, shahad simtsum vahester the shem elakim. The concealment of the name elakim, who rak regabe nivroim, is only looked at from our point of view. You only see it from our point of view. If we, this is supposed to represent an eye, not very well. I don't know. If we are looking, we see the name Elokim. I don't quite know what that represents. Okay, but if we are looking, maybe it's a telescope. We're looking and we see the name Elokim, but looked at from the point of view of the divine, you only see Havaya, you only see Yudke Vovke. So there are two different ways of looking. That the concealment of the name Elokim is only from the point of view of the created things, but from the point of view of the name Yudke Vovke, there is no concealment at all. Therefore, even after the enclosing of the name Yudke Bovke in the name Elokim, through which the world comes into being as an existing thing, nonetheless, that existence does not conceal as regards the divine. So, that's actually the nature of the world. That it is not a concealment as regards God. I mean, here comes the whole issue of the way in which people perceive, and the idea that it's possible to reach a level of perception, which is a spiritual level of perception, which sees the world in a completely different way. Because there we have this idea that existence, it depends how you look at it. If you're looking at it from the point of view of creation itself, so you see existence, you see the name of the Kim, which is there conceding the name Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. But if somehow or other we're able to enter into a deeper state of consciousness where we're looking in another direction, then we see the world as an expression of godliness.
It's a bit like a two-way mirror. From one side you can see right through. You can see what's going on. And the other side you only see the reflection.
I think that's a very good notion. Yeah. That's very nice. From one side, there's no barrier, and the other side, you just see the barrier. It's a mirror, and you just see yourself. Interesting.
Well, it's interesting because some people walk around and only see themselves.
Well, yes. Yeah. There's. Well. Maybe that's, you know, that's the problem of looking at existence in too coarse a way, that we only see our own self in it instead of seeing anyone else. Now there's a moshul, a famous moshul to illustrate this, of a teacher and a pupil. The teacher is trying to explain something to the pupil, and in order to do that he makes like mosholim, parables, all kinds of different ideas which are really only expressing a little bit of what he's trying to teach. But to the teacher the whole thing is clear. Even though to the pupil's only able to gain a little bit of it at a time. And he presents this moshul, and then he shows how that is really different, because from the point of view of the divine, every detail of existence, now this is a very, that's really something particular to Chabad. You see the idea that there's spiritual and there's physical, and, you know, is typical Kabbalistic thinking going back a long way. But what he comes out to in this discourse is also expressing the idea that however much there is a point of concealment, which is concealment in the real world, that reality is itself the revelation of the divine. It's not as if you focus on the divine and the concealment becomes irrelevant. It's that you focus on the divine and you see that the concealments are expressing the divine. You see, that's a third step, and that's actually the step of the third temple. Because the earlier dimension of the temple is this Havaya enclosed in Elohim, and the third temple is that it's actually revelation of God all the way through, including the Elohim, including all the concealments. The concealments themselves are part of the revelation. Okay, so let's take section 9, Ostes, please, on page Yud Beis, section 9. V'yesh lomar, and we can suggest, shegilui inyan zeh delei steina sehedyot, the revealing of this thing, that this is not an ordinary place, in other words, that the actuality, the reality of the concealment is really something expressing the divine. Part of what we missed out. Yir b'vayis hashlishi will be in the third temple. The first temple and the second are represented in the four names of the name Yud Kei Vav Kei Shiroim Zimal Eser Sfiras, suggesting which hint at the ten spheres. The first temple is in the first hay, and the second temple is in the second hay, and the third, and there's the Yud and the hay and the Vav and the hay. That's the first temple, Yud and hay. The second temple, Vav and hay, Ubay Shlishi, and the third temple, Hu Keser, is Keser, as explained above, which is really a revelation from above, the downchaining of the worlds. And that is the revelation which takes the name Elohim and all the reality, the clothing, as it were, and which transforms that into something which itself is revelation. So it's a remarkable kind of turning of the wheel that the, and I'm not quite sure how we would apply it in our different metaphors, but the way in which the something which is dark and concealing and problematic actually becomes the opportunity for revelation on the highest level. And that the revelation is here in this world, that it's this world that becomes that intense spiritual revelation. And then he moves into explaining about the ten sfirot, that within the ten sfirot you have radiance and vessel. That's the nature of the sphere. And the way in which we come to a point, is it that the sphere is concealing the radiance, or is the very fact of this combination is itself the way in which there is a revelation of the divine? In other words, you have two factors. You have concealment and revelation, but both of them, in a higher way, are part of the revelation. So it's like writing. So you write with black letters on white paper. So is the black a concealment of the white? No, it's a combination of the two that makes the revelation. So that's not a mashal, that's not an image he uses here, but it might be a useful image. So in that sense, it's the black and the white, the negative and the positive within existence, which itself is part of the communication of the divine, which is being communicated. And that's the realization of the third temple, that everything, the good and the bad together, is all part of this divine expression. Okay, section Yud. V'al-yedei gilu di-yichud hava Elohim, and through the unification of Yud Kei Vav Kei and Elohim in this way, shiyeh beveis ha-mikdash ha-shlishi, that will be in the third temple, shigam ha-mokum, that also place that comes into being from the name of the Kim, who kli la-gilu da-havaya shalamaylam ha-mokum, is a vessel for the revelation of Yud Kei Vav Kei, higher than place. Through this, yum shech me'en gilu zeh b'chol ha'olam, something of that revelation will be drawn through the whole world. The gilu, that's the os yud we're looking at, third line. The gilu zeh yeh be'ikah ba'agulu shel achrei binyan beis hamikdash, and that will be particularly in the redemption after the building of the temple. And the reason why the future redemption will be an eternal redemption, a geula which will not have an exile after it, is because then the world will be a vessel for the redemption. That's the quality. Because normally what happens is, there is a redemption. See, there's a cycle of redemption, exile and redemption. That's been the history of the Jewish people for thousands of years. But what happens, there's exile, then comes redemption. But the world as such is not a vessel for the redemption. And so the redemption is only there in a kind of a temporary way. But when it's in such a way that this connection between Yud Kei Vav Kei and Elohim is in such a way that the very worldliness of existence, the very enclosing, becomes itself the vehicle for Yud Kei Vav Kei, then throughout existence it will be a possibility that there will be a revelation of the divine, and then world itself becomes an expression of godliness in a wholesome way, and it is able to be that in a permanent way. Next paragraph. V'hine avsha gilu shiyumshuch ba'olam, even though the revelation that will come into the world, yirak me'ein agilu shebebeis hamikdash atzmo, it will only be a bit of the revelation in the temple itself. Nonetheless, yesh yisonim b'amshocha ba'olam, that which will be in the world will actually be higher. Ki ha'yichud ha'avai v'lekim shebebeis ha'migdash atzmoy, because the unity of Yudke Vovke and Elakim in the temple, kimon sheleis deinas ahed, yet since this is a special place, ein nikah b'zeh kol kach, you don't realize you don't realize that the unification is also from this way of looking, that from the name Elohim. And the revelation of this is actually mainly when it comes out from the temple to the whole world, to the ordinary world. And that's when the real revelation of the divine is perceived, not in the temple, it's as on account of the temple, but it's in the ordinariness of life. So here we are discovering the infinite sanctity in the everyday. And the ultimate Yudalef, finally, and the ultimate revelation of this unification of Avai Elohim will be with Tchias HaMeisim, the revival of the dead, which will be after the ingathering of the exiles, at the very end, because the revelation which will be in the world itself, it will be a finite revelation. In other words, the political dimension of Mashiach is in itself something finite, compared with the ultimate level of revelations that will be in the future. And so then, with Tchias HaMeisim, then the life of the body will come from an exalted dimension of godliness, which will be even higher than the soul, and therefore the soul will be fed from the spirituality of the body. And so then there will be a revelation of the infinite, the higher dimension of godliness, and this revelation will be in the body, which its source of the body is from the name Elohim. So in fact, it's the apotheosis of the worldly, of the physical, of the body. The whole idea that in Jewish thinking, the 13th principle of Maimonides, that the idea of Tchias HaMeisim, the revival of the dead, looked at from the normal point of view of spiritual movements in the world. Why should the physical body have such significance? Surely the life of the soul is the most important thing. And yet in Jewish teaching, the life of the body and the actions of the body in the mitzvahs is seen as standing on a pedestal. And it comes out in this eschatological dimension, the idea that the ultimate is the revival of the dead, and that is because it's the name Elohim and the way in which the name Elohim and all the enclosing of existence, of which the body is part of that. And in fact, the body is the key step of the enclosing of the spiritual. It's the fact that that enclosing will be the highest level of revelation that brings out the force of the concept of Tchias HaMeisim. And so that will be particularly with the coming of Mashiach, the building of the third temple, and that is why, and that will be the source of this complete transformation of the world, so that physicality itself will reveal a level of godliness higher than our conception of the spiritual at this moment, that it will be within the physical itself, there will be this infinite revelation. So what this discourse, which we've skated over, you could say, but what it's giving is a ways of looking at existence and seeing the way in which you have the world as a whole, which is like Elohim, and then you have points of radiance within the world, like the site of the temple, the first and second temple, the illumination of Yudke Vovke. And then we come to a higher dimension where Yudke Vovke united with Elohim in such a way that even looking at the point of view, looking towards the Elohim, one sees the godliness. That the reality, the physical reality of the world becomes itself the expression of the infinite. And that's really what we are moving towards, and that's the change of consciousness that the Rebbe in 1962, when this was taught, which he was sort of trying to make us appreciate. And of course later on in his life when he spoke more and more about Mashiach in like 1990-91, but it was this kind of perception that he was trying to communicate to us. And now we're in the 3 weeks, and if we're able to have this perception and change the nature of existence just by looking at it in a different way, then in 2 weeks' time we won't have to fast on Tisha B'Av, and instead we'll have the third temple.
Okay. It's interesting.